You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
In my first book, The 7-Day Algae Makeover, I go into a great deal about why it's so important to clean up your air quality in your home and environment if you want to minimize allergies, respiratory symptoms such as nasal congestion, coughing, and wheezing. I became a natural allergy expert because of my own son's health issues. And one of his worst triggers was from car exhaust. Bus exhaust, the smoke that comes out of all automobile mufflers, that's the byproduct of combustion of gasoline. Now, his symptoms were super obvious. He would cough and wheeze whenever we'd walk along a busy street during rush hour. And, you know, being in LA, that wasn't hard to find. And another time would be, let's say, we'd go under a parking lot, you know, an underground parking lot. And so when in those underground parking lots, you know, he would always come in when we're going into, let's say, an elevator, he'd be coughing and wheezing. So another thing was that recirculating air button in your car, that became our best friend. And it's something that most people don't even think about. But to me, it's one of the most important tips that I added in my allergy book. So today, really excited to have an environmental health expert here on Wellness for Life show. Dr. Roby Greenwald is an assistant professor in the Division of Environmental Health at Georgia State University School of Public Health. And his primary research interests are measuring the ways in which air pollution influences human health. So great to have you here, Dr. Roby.
Thank you.
So let's, you know, I talked a little bit about my son dealing with, air pollution. Can you tell us what is the largest source of air pollution in our cities?
Well, in a typical American city in the year 2017, the largest sources of air pollution are motor vehicles. And this is because many of the other sources of air pollution are reduced in concentration now. For example, emissions from power plants are less than they were a few years ago. Some of the industrial emissions are less than they were a few years ago. However, the number of miles people have driven in a car in the United States continues to go up year over year. So in a typical city now, that's what is left as the dominant air pollution source.
I know. Our population is obviously growing. It continues to grow. I live in LA, which is really ridiculous when you look at the type of traffic. Some people have to travel 2 hours in their cars to drive, you know, to and back from home. But one of the things that I find, and I tell this to my patients all the time, is don't live by the highway. What do you think?
That is not terrible advice. We know that the concentration of air pollution that comes from motor vehicles is highest closest to the highway. It depends on what specific pollutant you're talking about, but they tend to, the concentration falls off fairly rapidly within a couple hundred meters of the roadway. But that being said, some of the air pollution that is tied to motor vehicles actually is more spatially uniform. And the reason for that is that they undergo complicated chemical reactions in the atmosphere. We call them secondary pollutants because they're not actually emitted by the cars, but the things that make them are emitted by the cars, and then they react in the atmosphere. And the most important one of these pollutants is ozone, and it tends to be spread out over the city. So being far away from the highway does not protect you from being exposed to ozone.
Now, your expertise is in measurements of these type of gases and particulates. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
So you say about ozone, what other particulates or gases come out of car exhaust that is harmful to the human body?
Well, another gas pollutant that comes from cars would be oxides of nitrogen. So nitric oxide or nitrogen dioxide, either of these gases is emitted from cars. They also emit carbon monoxide. However, modern vehicles that have, you know, well-designed engines and are operating correctly really don't produce very much carbon monoxide anymore. But the more important than some of these gas-based pollutants are the particle-based pollutants. So we're talking about extremely small little particles that are coming from the combustion of the fuel in the engine. They come out the tailpipe of the car. And those are very small in the, 100 nanometers or smaller range. And so when you breathe them in, they go into the deepest part of your lungs. They can stay there and cause harmful reactions inside your body.
I mean, I think that's part of the reason why my son had a lot of asthma growing up.
It is related. We've seen from epidemiology studies, we've seen there is a relationship between exposure to traffic-related air pollution and the incidence of asthma.
Right. I actually looked at that article of yours. I dug a little bit more about, you know, who you are and what type of research. And you published an article in Air Quality, Atmosphere, and Health back in June of 2013. And you found the associations of pulmonary inflammation and reduction of lung function in children with asthma, that it was related to the pollution. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. Many studies have been done on this by many people all around the world, and all of them, most of them, have found very similar findings that the exposure to air pollution, whether it's a particulate pollutant or some of the ozone gas-based pollutant, can have a negative effect on lung function, and they can increase the inflammation in the airways, which tends to exacerbate asthma symptoms. So we do see an association between both how many people have asthma and how severe that asthma is related to how much air pollution they're exposed to. Now, this is not to say that air pollution is the only thing that causes asthma. There are many, many, many other things that also contribute to how many people have asthma and how severe it is.
Got it. You know, I remember so clear. This is my son, when he was, this was in the 90s, a long time ago. But I won't forget, the worst time was after school. He would sit there, and everyone after school would wait for their buses, right? Mm-hmm. And for being in carpool, getting picked up. And he was the only child. I had him sit in the principal's office because I didn't want him to be standing there waiting for all of us for 15, 20 minutes going by and get an asthma reaction. I mean, some kids can have really severe reactions to that. So when it comes to, when you did these studies, were you able to get any idea of how can we help these young people?
The best way to reduce your exposure to air pollution would be to minimize the amount of time you spend on roadways or near roadways. That's the number one thing that people actually have at least a little bit of control over that would help reduce these exposures. If we're talking specifically about how air pollution is triggering that, that's the number one advice I have. Now, some of the other things that would improve this problem are a little bit beyond the control of an individual. For example, in Los Angeles, in a large city with 25 million people, plus or minus, you don't have control over what those other 25 million people do. And so emissions from all those other cars on the roadway are what's contributing to the problem. So, a more societal level approach to fixing this problem would be to reduce the dependence on motor vehicles for people in large cities. And that requires, much larger, coordination of effort to try to introduce other modes of transportation to take up some of that slack.
I know it's a hard thing, asking people to carpool and going at different times. I what are we going to do here? It's definitely difficult to control. I want to ask you a question, and I'm not sure if you know this answer, but I want to ask you about a website that I've been actually searching for the last year. Last year, I somehow stumbled upon this website where I was able to plug in my zip code, and it found a lot of the particulates and chemicals that are in the air quality. and I was interested, obviously, in Los Angeles. Do you know which website I'm talking about?
Are you talking about airnow.gov?
Gosh, I'm going to write that down.
I am sitting right in front of my computer right now. Let me pull up the exact website we're talking about and have a look at it. There is a website maintained by the EPA called airnow.gov, and it shows PM2.5, which is a type of particulate pollutant, and ozone concentrations in the United States. And you can click on a map of the U.S. and zoom in on your specific location and see what the up-to-date concentrations are.
Well, I'm going to look for that and see if that's the exact same thing that I was talking about. Because when I did it last year and checked it out, it showed that LA had a very, very high level of ammonia.
Oh, ammonia is not on the airnow.gov network. I'm not sure which website
okay.
that's referring to.
Yes. And I started thinking about, you know, why do you think there was such a high level of ammonia?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen that data, so I can't really speak to that. I know that in general, ammonia often comes from agricultural operations, which wouldn't make a lot of sense in the middle of Los Angeles.
You know, I know.
Livestock feedlots, for example, are a source of ammonia in the air.
Right. Well, I better start keep on digging because I was super interested in that. You know, Los Angeles, we're considered close to the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very dry. Everything is dry. When you go outside of LA, there is no doubt that people, I can feel it. My skin's more moist. I don't have any trouble with the skin being so dry. I'm not always parched and wanting to drink water. And I thought possibly maybe the ammonia level was, because I know that ammonia, when you want to detox it and cleanse it, or I should say neutralize it, it binds to water. So I actually thought that just this was my own little, you know, theory that maybe it's so dry in LA because of the high ammonia is because it's sucking out all the water in the atmosphere.
Well, I think the humidity in LA is low naturally because it's a desert environment in that region.
I know what you're saying. It is deserty, right? But I live by the ocean. So by the ocean, it still feels dry. It's so bizarre. Who knows?
Well, you know, it all just depends on, the meteorology of where the precipitation's coming from, where wind patterns are coming from on that, on a small scale. But in Los Angeles in general, it's a fairly dry place.
It's a fairly dry place, yes.
Yeah, with or without human air pollution emissions.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that information. So, you know, you mentioned about the amount of feet that you said 200 feet. Is that correct?
I said meters. Yeah. You 1 to 200 meters or 1 to 300 meters is how far the concentrations of particulate pollutants from vehicles tends to stabilize before you start to see it being homogeneous throughout a region. So in other words, what I mean by that is that if you were to go into, say, the middle of Los Angeles away from a roadway and measure how many particulates they are and then go near a roadway, you'd see them be much higher near a roadway. But if you were to go away from the city, upwind of the city, you would see them even lower because, you don't have the influence of the cars when you're upwind of where the city is. So it's not to say that there are no particulate emissions from vehicles if you're more than 300 meters from a roadway. All it means is that you're back down, you're kind of mixed, the air from all over the city has a higher background level of particles there. But if you're right next to the roadway, it's much, much, much higher.
So roadway, you mean highways, right?
What I mean by roadways is, anywhere where there are vehicles, but how intense, how high the concentrations are depends on how many vehicles there are there. So the highest concentrations are going to be at the biggest roadways, the largest freeways that have the most number of cars on them.
Right. You also mentioned that if it was fresh emissions, that's more toxic as well.
Yeah, what we mean by fresh emissions is it's within a few seconds to minutes of it coming out of the tailpipe of a car. So, after something is emitted into the air, it's exposed to sunlight, it's exposed to other types of chemical compounds that are already present in the air. It starts to undergo chemical reactions that changes the chemical composition of different pollutants. It changes how big the particles are. So when that happens, we call those type of emissions, we call it well-aged. But when it's fresh, it means it's just come out the tailpipe of the car and it hasn't had a chance to do all those things yet. So for a typical person who is in a city that might have a lot of motor vehicles, the place where you are exposed to fresh emissions is when you're right on the roadway. Because think about it, you're driving down the road, there's a car right in front of you. You know, what gets inside of your car has come out the tailpipe of that car, a matter of seconds before you breathed it.
Yes, that is if you allow that air to come in. Remember, I was saying earlier in the intro that I use that little button, the air circulating button all the time, recirculating button, I should say. Do you know which
button I'm talking about? Yeah, I do, but I will warn you, that is not as effective as you might think it is.
Wow, tell me.
Well, we did, and the study that we finished last year, we were recruiting people in Atlanta to drive around the roadways at rush hour, and we were measuring all kinds of different pollutants inside their vehicles. Well, they were using their own vehicle to do this. So we had a total of something like 80 different makes or models of cars to participate in this study. And, we didn't control that at all. It's just whatever kind of car the person happened to have. And we noticed that for most vehicles, if you have the windows up and the air is turned on recirculation, you know, you really are still getting a lot of those particles are coming in the car, even with the windows up and even with your air conditioner recirculating the air. That's because these particles are very, very small. They can make it the filters in your car are not, you know, completely leak-proof. When you roll your windows up, they're not completely leak-proof either. So these really small particles are able to get past some of those systems. We did notice that a newer car tended to be a little bit better at it, but none of the cars were perfect.
Wow.
And another thing I have to mention about that is those filters only work to remove particles. A gas will blow right through one of those filters without being retained very well at all. So the concentrations of these things inside the car were surprisingly high. So I'll just warn you, that's not a magic button that's completely protecting you from all the air pollution that's around you.
Yeah, darn. Well, I'll tell you, I can feel a difference, at least for me. I can tell as soon as I go into, let's say, a taxi or an Uber, I can tell when that little button is not pushed because I can smell it. You know, it's so much stronger. So I know it does something. How much do you think, though, percentage-wise, how much do you think it'll cut it out?
It totally depends on what kind of car it is, and it also depends on how old it is, and it also depends on how fast you're driving and things like that. But, you know, it's somewhere, you know, a really good one might be, say, you know, 50 to 75% has been blocked.
Okay.
some of the older cars, you know, almost none of it is blocked.
Oh, that's good to know. I tell my patients and my audience to go and make sure, don't put your car in your garage if it's attached, you know what I mean? Because you mentioned about the fresh emissions, they can just basically put it in there and all those chemicals will go into the house.
Mm-hmm. That's potentially true.
Right. And then, so when you're saying is that, okay, if it's better to do it than not to do it, that's what you're saying.
I think that would be a safe thing to say.
Right. And then, I'm also someone that talks a lot about the chemicals that are in the car itself. And, you know, often if I take an Uber, oh my gosh, I call them ahead of time because I don't want those little fresheners, those trees, you know, that you see that they always put in. That stuff is just as toxic, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, there's all kinds of different brands, and they have used different types of chemicals in them. But yeah, they are not necessarily benign chemicals that are used to produce those odors.
Okay, so now that we learned we can't use roadways, we can't be next to them, but be careful. What else can we do? What else? As you know, I know if we live in a city, driving down side streets. What do you think?
Do you mean how will you avoid exposure to air pollution for yourself, or do you mean how do you avoid emitting air pollution that other people breathe?
I'd say both. That's a very good point. We need to work on both, don't we?
If you want to just reduce your exposure to other people's air pollution on a roadway, then being on a smaller roadway would help. However, you are going to still be emitting stuff out of your car as you're driving down somebody else's street, and that's going to still contribute to the problem. And if you're taking, like, say, a zigzag route and starting and stopping a lot, you might actually be creating more air pollution doing that. So if you really want to, say, cut the pollution problem off at the source, well, what you have to do is drive less. And, you know, when people hear that, they might think, oh, I can't go somewhere that I want to go to. Is that what you mean by drive less? No, it means that we come up with transportation systems that require people to use their vehicles less frequently in order to do the same stuff they want to do. So in other words, if you live in a city that has a transit network, using transit to go to work instead of driving your car to go to work would definitely improve air quality. The other things that we can do are to improve the efficiency of the vehicles, because think about it, the pollutants are coming from burning that fuel. So if you have to burn, say, a gallon of fuel to go 20 miles, and you're actually driving 40 miles to go to work, then you're emitting the emissions from 2 gallons of fuel to do that. However, if the efficiency of your car was that you could go 40 miles on 1 gallon, then you're only emitting the pollutants from 1 gallon of fuel to do the same thing.
Right.
How do you feel
about the green cars?
Green cars. Well, that's an important, another important point to make too. We could be talking about hybrids that are still using a gasoline motor as well as an electric motor, so they would be producing less emissions from gasoline per mile traveled. So that's an improvement. If you go to an electrified vehicle, a completely electrified vehicle that's not using a gasoline motor at all, then these cars would not be emitting pollutants from an internal combustion engine as they're driving down the road. Now, you still have to deal with the emission that came from wherever they made the electricity, and maybe that was by burning coal. There's still an emission associated with that, but generally speaking, it is much less than what it would be as if you were burning fuel in your car, driving it down the road to go the same distance.
Right. I know, some of my patients have these electric cars, and then they can use solar energy to generate the electricity to charge up these cars.
Well, that would be a great way to, dramatically reduce the amount of air pollution associated with having to drive that car. You're getting your energy from a completely different source that's not resulting in those kinds of emissions.
Yeah, we just got to figure out more ways here, you mentioned about your that you've worked on regarding the inside of a car. Anything else that you're coming out with from the university, Georgia State University?
We haven't really been looking at emissions from things that are inside the car. I think one of the things we did mention is that since we were measuring air pollution inside the car, we really couldn't tell if something had come from inside the car or outside the car. So in other words, if you had a source of air pollution inside the car, it might have shown up on our sampling system, and we would have thought maybe it came from outside. Now, that's a really small fraction of the total. So, if somebody has, say, a really strong, really pungent air freshener inside the car, that's producing a type of a chemical that we call a volatile organic carbon, or VOC. So if we were measuring VOCs inside the car, we couldn't tell just by our measurement whether that VOC was coming from the guy's air freshener or if it was coming from something that was outside the car and getting in through the windows.
Gotcha. But obviously what you're saying is that you found out that there are definitely pollutants inside the car.
Well, no. We know from just other information that other people have done, we know that there are sources of these VOCs inside of cars. But what we were saying is that we couldn't tell the difference. Although, like I said a second ago, the vast majority of the VOCs that we measure inside of cars are actually coming from outside the cars. They're coming from the other vehicles on the road around you.
Often, when we, I'm just thinking about mold specialists, they come in and what they do is they look at the mold amount outside the house and then the mold amount inside the house, and that's how they get an idea where is the mold. Is it the same as outside or is it from the inside? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then are you doing anything new? That's what I was
The things we're working on now are looking at how your exposure to air pollution is affected by physical activity. And, I've been doing a couple of different aspects of this. So one of the things we're doing is working with high schools where students are participating in extracurricular sports. outside, you know, in the afternoon. Some of these schools are located near roadways, so they're breathing air pollutants at those spots. So we're looking at how that might affect their health. Then another way we're looking at it is looking at people who are walking or bicycling for transportation. So that, you know, instead of driving a car to work, you're actually riding a bike to get there. So you're being physically active, but you're still on a roadway. You're still near, or you're near a roadway at least. And so this combination of being physically active and being exposed to air pollution at the same time has some interesting effects.
That just reminds me of the street that we used to run in Los Angeles called San Vicente, and it's definitely very, very busy. And I would run literally 6 miles a day on that road when I was in college. And after I found out that UCLA did a study on the runners and found that there were a lung tissue damage, that's when I stopped doing it over there.
What I would recommend is that if you have the option to run in a different spot, then maybe that would be a good thing to do instead of running right on that roadway. But however, all of our work so far has shown that the health benefits that come from getting that activity outweigh the negative aspects that come from breathing more air pollution.
You're
doing yourself a favor by going for the run.
Great. I love that. Just run in a better place. Thank you so much, Dr. Roby. Thank you so much, Dr. Greenwald. Great having you on our show. All righty. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.